Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska!
Oh, yes! I hate this! It is revolting!
More?
Please.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, March 29, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, how are you? I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 435 of the Biden-Harris administration, 222 days until the 22 midterms. I'm on Instagram at TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go. And oh my God, sitting right over there, it's Buzz Burbank.
When you say Buzz Burbank.
Ow!
You've said it.
Wow. I didn't do that. Oh, I did man. Not do that. I swear
well,
to God.
I'm a little shaken. I haven't even told my first joke, and Will Smith just slapped me.
See, there, you get a rim shot. Yeah.
As he has explained, he's Bob, I'm Buzz, and we just got a text from Ginny Thomas demanding we overturn last week's show. Sad news this week, though. The inventor of those animated graphics known as GIFs or GIFs, the inventor of those graphics died this past week. The funeral will be this week, and it'll be short and repeat every 3 seconds. Last week on the show, we learned that Trump, while president, asked Kid Rock for foreign policy advice.
Oh,
remember?
God, yeah.
Well, I think now it's pretty clear Trump got his domestic advice from Kanye West. President Biden was on the phone with China's President Xi the other day to talk about Russia's war on Ukraine. It's hard to tell how it went. It's all just he said, she said. That one you could slap me for, okay?
Okay. All right.
That was a dad joke.
There you go.
The Judge Jackson hearings last week were tough, weren't they, in the Senate?
Oh, yeah.
Marsha Blackburn asked Judge Jackson to define the word woman because Blackburn wants to know what it's like to be one.
Every single one of these are home runs.
And this week, Trump sold the lease on his Washington, D.C. hotel. And the new owners say they plan to make it a Waldorf Astoria just as soon as they can unclog the toilet.
More music, the Bob Seska Show.
Yeah.
I'm lying alone with my thumbs on the phone, tweeting all night till it hurts.
Rocky Mountain
on the
Mike.
Toilet.
We know that we're screwed, but what else can we do? Our country is torn apart. I wish we could carry the Senate and House, because all these times seem so low. And if we're to believe Michael Cohen will sing, when today we don't really know. We don't really know.
So
I'm
much
all
we don't
out
know.
Of folks. Yep. What is all this due to? I'm sick of the right being so wrong for so long. I'm all out of fucks.
Yep.
What is all this do-do? I'm sick of the right. Being so wrong for so long. I'm all out of fucks. Yep. What is all this do-do? I'm sick of the right. Being so wrong for so long.
Yeah, amen.
So me.
Yeah.
I am so there. I am 1,000% out of fucks right about now.
Do you
now.
Feel like, and I thought of this just before the show, do you feel like we're in a kind of a pressure cooker?
Yeah.
Only it's sealed. There is no relief valve on this.
Know.
And the pressure is building and building. And so it feels as though some sort of explosion is imminent.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Look, we've been talking about this for a long time now and building toward whatever that explosion ends up being, Buzz, because... God, we're all acting out. We're all stressed out. We're all freaked out by what's going on and everywhere, one existential crisis to the next. And it's a lot to digest. And yes, we are going to talk about the smack, but not right now. We're going to talk about that later in the show.
There's so much going on, and even today, bigger things than the smack.
And I love how we're just calling it the smack.
Yeah.
It's just the smack. Oh, shit. Well, you know what? The good news is that Kimberly and I don't have COVID. That's all positive news. Yeah. At least that's what we think. I mean, that's what the tests are telling us, that... She took a couple of home tests, and she did a PCR test the other day where she had to go out and get a swab. All of it came up negative. And for my part, I haven't had any symptoms. She's had this sore throat that seems to be getting worse and worse over time. She said today it's even worse than it was yesterday and so on.
And so we
have no idea what it is. I mean, it could be anything from allergies to some other cold that she might have. So who the hell knows? But it's at least a relief to know that we don't have BA2 or BA1 or BA Baracus, which is he pities the fool. That's the virus that pities the fool, by the way.
And we just learned before the show today that BA2 variant of Omicron COVID is now the dominant strain in the United States.
Yes, it is.
And it is highly contagious, more contagious than all of the others. We don't think it's as serious.
Yeah.
But what we've learned is that even if you're vaccinated, even if you have little or no symptom, you can still endure long-term damage from this. We're finding out more and more about the damage this virus does if you allow it to get in your body. So Bob and Kimberly and I and a lot of you are still making every reasonable effort to keep it from getting into our bodies.
Yeah, and our thing was, when we thought maybe she had it and maybe I had it and was asymptomatic, our thinking was, is how the fuck did we end up getting this? Because we are pretty goddamn safe. I mean, no one's as safe as Jody Hamilton, but we're pretty safe as kind of a second, third tier safety-minded household.
I'm third tier.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, we can debate that one, sir. But yeah, I mean, we've been pretty safe. So how the hell would she have gotten? But thank God it's not that.
Right.
Here's the thing, though. I think the reporting, the infection curve that we're going to see as a result of BA2 is not going to be as pronounced, because I think a lot of people are doing home tests, not reporting, dealing with sort of low-grade symptoms like this, sore throats and whatnot.
Staying home as if it were the flu or whatever.
Self-treating and all of that. So we're not really going to see, if it happens, I don't know if we're going to see an infection curve, and that's going to give us a false sense of security.
And we don't know, and the experts don't know. Is this the beginning of the end, or is this just the beginning of the next wave? We are at the point that if this proves to be serious, and there is every bit as much chance that it is serious as there is chance that it isn't, at this point in the story of COVID, the meteor is now too close to Earth to stop. And that's kind of where we are. So if it's bad, if we're wrong that everything's okay, there's a world of hurt. And when you said things are happening now, one right after another, my thought was, no, things are happening all at the same time. And that's the difficult part, because as that COVID meteor hurtles toward the Earth, and it may hit us and it may not, but as it hurtles toward us, we're dealing with our own existential crisis of democracy in this country while the war goes on in Ukraine. Yep. Although there are actually positive news today about both of those things.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to get to that. But I think before we dig into anything from Ukraine, we got to talk about, I think, the biggest story of the week, at least something that dropped today that could be dominating news for the next several days, provided that we're all done talking about the smack after another 12, 24 hours. There's another huge scoop from both Muggsy and Bob Woodward, who have been working together on this particular front.
I forgot you called former Washington Post reporter Robert Costa Muggsy.
I do, and thank you for clarifying.
He's now with CBS News, yes.
Yeah, well, he looks like a Muggsy. I mean, what can you say? He looks like he would wear a fedora with a little tag in it that says press.
I agree.
He's got that old-timey thing where he's dashing up to a bank of payphones to call in the latest story.
And he's shrewd.
Yeah. There's a 7-hour, 37-minute gap, speaking of 50 years ago, in Trump's White House call logs on January 6th, of 7.5 hours in which there's no log of Donald Trump making any official phone calls,
it's the same 7 hours in which he told, directed his minions to the Capitol and all the violence took place. It's funny how that 7-hour gap matches almost perfectly the period of time that the insurrection was visible.
Yeah, and we can add this to the list of music cues when we talk about this subject. Yeah. Burner phones. Breaking Bad burner phones is what we may be discussing here. Yeah. I mean, what else is he using? What else is he employing to make these phone calls to whoever?
Or were the records destroyed or some combination of these things? I suspect it's some combination of these things. I think any records, either records were ordered to be not taken or they were destroyed. Yes, there may have been burner phone conversations. Here's the upside to this, and that is that we know that the January 6th committee already has call logs of some of the people the White House and Trump were talking to during those 7 hours. So we can begin to fill in some of those missing calls. And with a judge's ruling yesterday, we should be able to fill in a lot more.
Yeah. Also, remember this number. For some reason, Muggsy and Bob Woodward felt the need to calculate this out by minutes. It's 457 minutes on January 6th, from 11:17 a.m. to 6:54 p.m., there's no way Donald Trump spent all that time on a day like Jan 6 not saying a fucking word. Donald Trump hasn't gone 7.5 hours without saying a word. I mean, not even in his sleep. I mean, even when he's sleeping, I'm sure he's like, me. Very great, very tremendous.
Not even 7 minutes, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. So obviously something hinky is going on here. And does this shake DOJ out of its seeming torpor? I don't know.
This is the tipping point. It's now or never.
Yeah.
Not only is there all this public pressure, which has been sort of bubbling out here for a while on Merrick Garland to act or speak or some combination of these things. Now there's a really intense pressure coming from the January 6th committee, which has the right to refer criminal charges to the Justice Department, and also increasing pressure really coming from this judge that we're going to discuss.
And this takes us right back to that 18-minute gap in the White House tapes during Watergate. Yes.
Yeah, and only this one's 7 hours long. It's not minutes, it's hours.
Yes.
And it's during something much scarier than what happened in Nixon's day, and that's saying something.
But didn't that change the entire trajectory of the Watergate investigation when that 18 minutes was discovered? I mean, didn't that amplify everything to the next level?
That was the turning point. And if we can interject a message about messaging here, kids, this is the time to get on your Twitters and your Facebooks and to get out the word about this 7.5 hour gap in the White House call logs during the insurrection. This is excellent messaging for the Democrats. It's also, you mentioned the tapes being a turning point in Watergate. This is perhaps a turning point, but certainly a tipping point.
Yeah.
At this point, as the kids say, the shit gets real.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope that's the case, because we've kind of lost Alvin Bragg in all of this. And I say kind of because it's not fully closed yet. It's in this phantom zone. We don't know whether SDNY is going to pick this up at the federal level. We don't know what's happening with Alvin Bragg at this point, but it's not good. They got to for all intents and purposes, take that off of the list of things, unfortunately.
And Letitia James, within the Capitol with the state attorney general's office, is expressing frustration that despite court orders, she still hasn't received Trump financial documents. There are some bad things going on out there, or perhaps good things that are not going on, but there are also good things going on. Mm-hmm. And I really think this is a tipping point. And when it all ties together with the wife of a Supreme Court justice and the justice himself breaking the law in connection with this insurrection, I mean, this thing is massive, but it's becoming more clear at this point.
Yeah.
And as I have predicted, although I thought the hearings would start sooner, I think they've been delayed for a reason. But, man, based on what we're learning, it's going to be quite a show.
Oh, yeah. It seems like every week there's something new that they're adding to the docket. They're adding to their investigation, and that changes the entire scope of what we're talking about here. So it would be almost premature to start public hearings at this point, given the pace at which new information is being discovered. So,
That may be the reason that Merrick Garland isn't acting, and maybe the reason we haven't heard from him on this. But, again, there's very encouraging news on that front. I just got, just before we went on the air, Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post came out with an announcement by the Justice Department that the January 6th investigation now reaches nearly every U.S. attorney's office and nearly all FBI field offices.
Wow.
They just got, what is it here, another $34 million to hire 80 attorneys for this investigation, 80 more attorneys. They'd already brought 750 cases. Just one quote here from Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco. The January 6th investigation is among the most wide-ranging and most complex this department has ever undertaken. It reaches, and I mentioned the U.S. attorneys and field offices. She says, regardless of whatever resources we seek or get, talking about money, let's be very clear, we're going to continue to do those cases. She added, we are going to hold those perpetrators accountable no matter where the facts lead. And as the attorney general has said, no matter at what level, we will do those cases.
God, thank God. You know, the other thing with this, and this is a bigger issue than just sort of the specifics of who's investigating what. I hope at some point in the not too distant future, we get back to a place in this country where this kind of deceptive obstructionist behavior from someone who's being investigated automatically in public view and certainly in the view of the mainstream press seems guilty. We have lost sight of that. It used to be pre-Trump, if someone was being this obstructionist about handing over evidence, about testifying, we would all be collectively going, and I think a lot of Republicans, too, would be saying, yeah, you know what? This makes him look guilty. This makes him look really, really... And then in the court of public opinion, then he's found, by and large, guilty. Obviously, there are going to be some holdouts. There were people who supported Richard Nixon up to the end.
At this point in our story, two-thirds of Republicans still believe that Donald Trump won that election. Two-thirds of Republicans. Yeah. And that's what we're up against. And one of the reasons I think it's taking a while is we have to have an airtight case that we can sell. Yeah. We have to have a story that is so overwhelming, even some of the red hats will have to, you know, admit they were wrong.
Yeah, well, I hope that's the case. I hope we get to a place where people are a little bit more reasonable. But as we're going to discuss later in the show, we're still caught in the throes of what I believe is the American nervous breakdown. We're in the middle of a societal nervous breakdown where we've kind of lost sight of what's real, what's punishable, what's worthy of investigation, what's right, what's wrong. In many circles, the dividing line between right and wrong has become so immensely blurred in this country. It's staggering and discouraging, and it's, I think, a sort of source of a lot of our stress collectively.
Yes, absolutely.
And then we see stories like this where this federal judge, this is a U.S. district judge, said that Donald Trump likely committed felony obstruction of Congress. He wrote here, this is a U.S. District Court Judge David Carter.
Right.
Based on the evidence, the court finds it more likely than not that President Trump corruptly attempted to obstruct the joint session of Congress on January 6, 2021. Carter's sweeping and historic ruling came as he ordered the release to the Jan. 6 committee of 101 emails from Trump ally John Eastman, rejecting Eastman's efforts to shield them via attorney-client privilege. Eastman used the email account of his former employer, Chapman University, to discuss political and legal strategy related to efforts to overturn the 2020 election, and had sued the Select Committee to prevent them from obtaining the emails from the school. Chapman University spokesperson Cerise Valenzuela Metzger said the university would comply with the court order, and Eastman said in a statement through his attorneys he would also comply. But the statement about Donald Trump, that he more likely than not corruptly attempted to obstruct the joint session of Congress, see also what we were discussing a few seconds ago about the call logs. This, if Merrick Garland hasn't been acting up to this point in regard to investigating Donald Trump specifically, I hope this gives him a... I almost said a smack to the back of the head, but maybe that's the wrong metaphor today. I hope in a figurative sense, it shakes him into some form of investigatory action here. At the very least, some of these obstruction charges, these recommendations of criminal obstruction coming from the January 6th committee, which I don't see any action there either.
If Garland hopes to save the country and his own legacy, we need to see action. A lot of progressives believe they already have enough evidence and it's overwhelming. Yeah. It doesn't always work that way in court, and so you got to give Garland a little leeway here. We've given him a lot of leeway, and as I said, we're at a tipping point now.
Yeah.
This judge's comment cited the comments by Eastman, who said we're no longer playing by Queensbury rules. The judge said the illegality of this plan is obvious. This is a point at which Garland has choice, but very little choice, really. There's really only one happy, survivable way for Garland to go at this point, and now appears to be the time. A little note about Eastman, if I may. Our listeners may or may not know. Dr. Eastman is the lawyer who wrote the memo that explained how Pence could do his part to overturn the election.
Right.
He came up with that whole scheme when he said, we're not playing by Queensbury rules here. He was admitting that it was illegal. And he's also a former clerk of, wait for it, Judge Clarence Thomas.
Wow.
And Eastman is a close friend of, wait for it, Ted Cruz.
Ugh.
Ted Cruz is now also under scrutiny by the January 6th committee.
Yes.
And we're going to see in these hearings how this all ties together. But all the usual suspects are our prime suspects in this.
So let's talk about Ted Cruz with his visible layer of slime. Isn't the story that Donald Trump called Ted Cruz to represent him, to argue his case before the Supreme Court?
And Cruz agreed, yes.
Which would have also involved Clarence Thomas, obviously, without any sort of recusal. God, knowing full well that Ginny Thomas was actively working to overturn the election. I mean, for fuck's sake, this is like the very definition of a conspiracy. I mean, we always talk about conspiracy theories. This is a legitimate conspiracy. This is numerous people all working in secret towards the end of disrupting the peaceful transfer of power and overturning a democratic election.
Staggering. Exactly. Clarence Thomas knew he did what he had agreed to do. He held up his end of the bargain by being the only justice. He also made himself obvious by being the only justice to vote against release of White House materials from Trump. This is Ginny Thomas and he have referred to each other as their best friend. Ginny says she was talking to her best friend during this period of time, despite other denials that you'll hear. This is all actually very neatly tied together, as complex as it may sound to some. It's pretty clear. It all narrows down to the same folks.
Oh, yes. And we all know who they are. It's just like they were saying on the Stephanie Miller Show earlier today. There's video. We can see this shit happening. Yes. We know who is involved. And it's the worst kind of goddamn gaslighting that they're just, I mean, every time you tune into Fox News, it's the same shit where you go, oh my God, am I losing my fucking mind? And you're not. You're not losing your mind. You're not alone. You're not going crazy. This really happened, and these people perpetrated exactly what you think they did.
Well, and isn't it true that you and I and the people listening to us are going to once and for all lose faith in our system, in our justice system, if there isn't some kind of accountability? In my mind, in many ways, democracy dies if Garland fails to act quickly.
Yep. And here,
I just wanted to add one other comment from the judge that I thought was beautifully written. Judge Carter wrote in this ruling. He was demanding that emails be turned over to the January 6th committee, 100 emails. And he writes, if Dr. Eastman and President Trump's plan had worked, it would have permanently ended the peaceful transition of power, undermining American democracy and the Constitution. And then he said, if the country does not commit to investigating and pursuing accountability for those responsible, the court fears January 6th will repeat itself. And you and I know that's true as well.
Oh, my God. Abso-fucking-lutely. If Joe Biden wins re-election against, let's say, Donald Trump, or let's say Ron DeSantis or someone else, there is going to be a repeat of this. If the Democrats, by some miracle, and then suddenly Democratic voters turn out and get energized for this thing, you know, to save the goddamn Republic, Democrats, if we actually pull out a greater majority in the Senate and hang on to our majority in the House this year's midterms, oh my God, it's going to happen again. That's when the next insurrection will happen, and it'll happen around the same time,
And pounding repeatedly the simple idea of that 7.5 hour gap in White House records, I think will frame the situation as it is for the American people.
Absolutely. And the next thing here, and this, I think, feeds into why we're all feeling this sense of hopelessness, this sense of helplessness in the face of what's happening all around us, what's certainly what's happening to our government and our mainstream media to an extent. CBS News has inexplicably hired Mick Mulvaney as a news contributor. And today they had him breaking down Joe Biden's tax plan on wealthy Americans. I'm sure you can probably guess what he had to say about raising taxes on rich people. This is exactly what I was concerned about from going back, I don't know, years and years and years while Trump was still president. I knew for a fact that after Trump left the White House and a little bit of time went on by, that there would be platforms that would try to normalize these villains. And I'm not talking about Fox News. It was obvious that a lot of these people, Kellyanne Conway and so on, are going to go on Fox News Channel. That was clear from the get-go.
Right.
But what I'm talking about is the networks and the news shows watched by normals. That's where, you know what, we got to keep a close eye on this because you know they're going to try. They're going to try to rehabilitate these people. Sean Spicer had already gone on whatever it was, Dancing with the Stars. Tucker Carlson had been on Dancing with the Stars. Things like that. But now they're getting into the realm of actual news programming. And that's
A CBS News. It's not just this, though. It's not just that. CBS is becoming Fox, and I think people need to know that because it's not just the hiring of Mulvaney. There was a CBS News memo that told the journalists not to use the words coup or insurrection in covering January 6th, that they were actually peaceful protesters and there was no need to over-dramatize the story. Wow. For at least 2 weeks in a row, CBS's Face the Nation has aired the thoughts and feelings of Republicans without providing any time at all to Democrats. Their political editor at this point used to work for Republicans. It's become a Republican network. It's become Fox News. And one of the reasons I think, Chris Wallace has been talking about why he left Fox. A number of news channels are in turmoil right now, Fox, CNN, CBS. And Chris Wallace left Fox because he couldn't any longer be associated with that, he says. So there's all this churning going on. We also know that Fox has been reacting to networks like OAN and Newsmax. And so that's why Fox has stuck to the most insane theories over recent weeks. They've gone even farther to the right, and now CBS News is filling the void left by Fox.
Yes, and it's absolute bullshit.
Bullshit.
Yes, it is bullshit. And here's the thing. This is a programming choice. This is I keep saying this phrase, it's a cynical cash grab. It's like, we're going after that market segment because we feel as though NBC News, ABC News, they've got the normals sewn up, but what? There's maybe more people that we can grab over here on the red hat side, on the Republican side, that we haven't previously harvested.
That's
so let's go over there and do that. And that's, oh my God, the cynicism. The ignorance of what journalism should be coming out of this decision. And I don't think I'm making too big a deal out of this, by the way.
No, you're not. You're not.
Yeah. Because you know what else? There are about a million other people who could go on television right now, fully polished, with all the expertise in the world on economic issues, and do a much better job than Mick Mulvaney ever fucking could, that goddamn weasel. I mean, yes. There's no one else capable of doing this crap, CBS News? I mean, Jesus Christ. Why not just hire Donald Trump himself? Why not bring Alternative Facts Kellyanne Conway on? I guess I shouldn't tempt fate.
It could happen. Careful. Shh. Yeah.
Never mind. Forget I just said that.
We'll cut that out.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating, but you're absolutely right. And I am heartened that CBS is taking such a beating about this today on social media. And a part of our progressive message, in addition to hammering that 7-hour gap, I think we should be hammering away. And it's at CBS News, by the way, if you'd care to tweet toward them or about them. They're getting quite a beating. I hope this has some effect. I don't know if it will or not, but we certainly need to make CBS aware and everyone else aware of what's happening here.
The real pisser about it, Buzz, though, is the fact that they most likely went through a whole contract negotiation process with business affairs and Mulvaney's people, and they worked out a deal, a number of slots in which he appears, the amount of money he's going to be paid, whether he gets a car to take him to the studio, etc. All that shit has been worked out. So it's not like he's appearing as a random guest that shows up in one of those squares like we see on cable news a lot. It's not like that's not his job. And that's easy to it's easy to stick that toothpaste back in the tube with a contract and a salary and a commitment made by both parties. That's a lot more difficult to unravel. And so that's what makes it dangerous.
Indeed, he's being passed off as a journalist when he isn't that at all. And you're right. What you just talked about, the length of the contract negotiations, the length of the process about thinking about whether or not to approach him, or maybe perhaps he approached them and they had to think about it. Apparently, they didn't think long. But it underscores my point that CBS has been on this track for a while now, perhaps since maybe even before January 6th. And there's a lot of turmoil within CBS News right now, just as there is at CNN and Fox, and there's a lot of this going around. Not every network has been subject to it yet, but those three have.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I forget the networks still exist. I think that's part of my problem. Like, oh my God, their broadcast network's still out there. Holy shit, okay. And so consequently, I had no idea that this was a trend. I had no idea CBS was moving in this direction. Not surprising, though. Not surprising in the slightest.
At least David Muir's ABC World News Tonight, last night, spent sadly only about 45 seconds on the things that we're talking about today. What the judge had to say, what January 6th committee is doing. It was just a quick wrap up with a few still photos.
Yeah.
And so it was a very short story compared to the 3 minutes and 45 seconds they spent on the Will Smith slap. Of course the Trump story came after the Will Smith story. So, this shows you where priorities still are, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
the right things are not getting attention, which is why we appreciate so much people coming here and other places to find out what exactly is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for supporting this show. I very much appreciate it. We all appreciate it. And we do try to rise to those levels of expectations as well. So we hope we deliver. All right. Well, coming up here in a second, we're going to talk about it. Yeah. I don't know what else to say at this point, but we're going to get into it.
Okay.
I have not really commented on this topic publicly.
Right, I noticed.
Yeah. And I've deliberately wanted to take some time to really seriously think about it. I didn't want to knee-jerk into an opinion.
Nor did I.
Yeah, and also I didn't want to join the cavalcade of opinions on this thing necessarily, but I feel as though this really does dovetail into something we've been talking about on the show for quite some time now. And so therefore I would like to highlight it, analyze it, and at least weigh in on what exactly happened and how it relates to what we've been discussing already. So we're gonna
I did tweet a couple of observations about it initially without taking sides. Now, because I wasn't sure where things were going to land how things to be. I knew I needed to be careful, which is something to think about.
Yes. But, oh my God. Yes.
But I have, of course, engaged in discussion since in the comments and everything after those tweets. But initially, I was just making humorous observations about it.
Yeah. Well, I think most people can kind of guess where I'm going to land on this thing. So we're going to get into that in just a second. But there's nothing more stressful than out of control credit card debt. I've been there myself. I remember waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a sheer panic over the size, the enormity of the debt I was having to deal with, plus the sense of futility. I ended up filing a Chapter 7 back in the day, but you don't have to resort to that nuclear option. All you need is Lightstream. So did you know that refinancing your credit card balances can lower your interest rate and save you money? And you don't have to be a financial expert to do it. Here's how. You can get a fixed rate credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream, and you could save thousands in interest. Rates start at 4.98% APR with auto pay and excellent credits, lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. You get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and you might even get the money in your bank account on the very day that you apply online. And here now, just for my listeners, you can apply now and get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Seska. That's LIGHTSTREAM.com/CESCA. As always, I got a link in the description under this episode at bobseska.com. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Seska. That's lightstream.com/Seska for more information.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Bob Seska!
Love this album so much. Totally standing this album. It's one of the best. This is Cersei Link and Christian Nesmith, and a song called God from the Machine. It's the very last track off of the Cosmologica album, which is great. And if you love prog rock, if you love like modern progressive, something that's kind of a throwback to the 70s, early 80s, this would be it. I love it.
I know why you like this. Oh, it sounds very much like Yes.
It is very much like Yes. It's certainly in that genre. Yeah. There's a lot of influence there. In fact, Cersei and Christian Nesmith, they've been covering some Yes songs on their YouTube channel as well, too. So, and we played their cover of Starship Trooper, I want to say over this past summer, it may have been the summer before, but just an unbelievable cover, and it's Cersei Link collaborating not only with her husband, Christian Nesmith, but also with Paul Mellinson, who's another recording artist we've played here in the show. And both Cersei and Paul do the lead vocals. It's just an incredible performance, and I'm so in love with this album. I've been playing it on loop just endlessly over and over again. Again, CerseiLink.com, link in the description under this episode. Pun not intended. Okay.
Others might disagree, but I like the way musical styles or sub-genres cycle back around. You know, yeah. It's almost like clothing fashion. You know, bell-bottoms in, bell-bottoms out, bell-bottoms in, bell-bottoms out. And we keep going around like that. But and while somebody might criticize that, I actually think it's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, real quick, something to say about Taylor Hawkins from Foo Fighters.
Right.
Such a tragic loss.
Wow.
My age, he was 50 years old, most likely died under similar circumstances as our friend Chez. Mm-hmm. It looks like at this point that it may have been a drug overdose in, where was he, Colombia? Were they performing down in South America?
Right.
Yeah, and
as soon as I heard that he had passed, it was noted by a number of people. Well, they didn't say how or where. And as soon as I heard it was in Colombia, we heard where before we heard how.
Yeah.
And as soon as I heard it was in Colombia, I went, "Oh boy, oh no!" And naturally, I thought of cocaine, but that wasn't one of the drugs in his system.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not only a tragedy for those of us who are Foo Fighters fans, and I'm a huge Foo fan, Foo Fighter fan.
They fight the Foo.
Yeah, exactly. But on top of that, it feels like another nail in the rock and roll coffin. And
literally,
while we do play a ton of just incredible rock and roll music here on the show, it's all independent. It's all on the alternative charts as well. There's a lot of rock and roll coming out of Memphis, for example.
Yes.
But short of that, there's little or no rock whatsoever on the Billboard Top 100, the Hot 100. It's certainly not a top 40 radio airplay kind of thing anymore. And it feels like with Foo Fighters, they were, and still, I mean, I don't know if they're breaking up or not, but they are one of the last mainstream rock and roll bands. And whatever ones that are left, we need them to keep going. And losing Taylor Hawkins feels like a step in the wrong direction. And what a tragedy.
And I think they made a horror film, Studio 666, the group did. And it casts a weird pall on that movie. That may sort of disappear into obscurity. I don't know.
My God. I mean, just talk about a band that sort of signifies the last 20, 25 years of music. You can go back through all of the events and eras of the past quarter decade, and Foo Fighters are right there, charting, writing music that's important. I mean, I'll never forget back in 2015, listening to that group of, I think, 1,000 musicians all performing Learn to Fly all at the same time, and the chills and the tears I experienced watching that glorious moment with all of these people coming together with smiles on their faces, hand in hand, performing this great piece of music. And it's such a tribute to Foo Fighters, but also a tribute, I think, to the good side of humanity, the good side of the force, so to speak. And we see that so seldom. And I think one of the areas where we don't see it as often, and someone posted this meme the other day, Buzz, it was on Twitter, where they said, here's a photograph of the Oscars before the pandemic, and it was that group selfie with Ellen DeGeneres and Bradley Cooper.
Right.
Remember that group? And it was like this happy moment, and then it said, after the pandemic, and it was the photograph of Will Smith smacking Chris Rock on stage.
There is a tie-in there, as you indicated earlier, as part of the American Nervous Breakdown.
And that was the first thing that occurred to me, that we have entered. Yeah, we have entered this new era, and I've sort of been blanket referring to it as the American Nervous Breakdown, but there's something that's even more specific under that umbrella definition. And that is acts of lashing out at the people we disagree with. I'm talking about the slap defamation suits, the active endeavor of trying to silence people's political opinions using defamation lawsuits. Plus, you've got all of these confrontations of public figures in their homes or in restaurants, whether it's red hats confronting liberals or liberals confronting red hats, throwing pies at Bill Kristol or shoes at George W. Bush. I mean, that goes back a way. Or insurrections, the insurrection that we saw on January 6th, and the militia groups for that
acting
matter.
Out.
Yeah, yeah, acting
there's
out.
There's a lot of acting out now, indeed. Yeah. And you see it in, we talked about it before, in grocery stores and in, on airlines.
Right.
It's everywhere.
Yes. So as far as the actual event at the Oscars, we were just like everyone else watching the Oscars Sunday mm-hmm. night. Same at here. First, we thought, okay, this is a bit. They're doing a little comedy skit here with Will Smith pretending to be outraged by something. I thought that up until I saw Will Smith actually yelling.
Right.
And while it was muted by the network, I could still tell, oh no, this is not a bit. He was really pissed off.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it was a terrible joke. It was a stupid fucking joke. I mean,
stupid, yes.
Yes. Yeah. It was a dumb joke. G.I. Jane came out in 1997.
Right.
Bald woman jokes stopped being funny about 2 minutes after that movie came out. Uh-huh. And so it's just like, oh my God, what a hack Oscar style joke. It's like something that, okay, yes, it's a crowd pleaser because everyone knows G.I. Jane and that Demi Moore shaved her head for that role because she was in the movie. She's trying to become a Navy SEAL, for God's sake. You know, there's no knowing what he knew or the writers on the Oscars knew, whether right. they realized that she had a disease that was causing her hair to fall out.
A lot of people have pointed out that she's been public for months on her alopecia, and that's fine, except I didn't know that until this
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't know that until this week. And therefore, it's not fair or reasonable for us to assume that Chris Rock knew that, even though he did a documentary about black women's hair earlier and should have been more sensitive to it, as I have been told.
Yeah.
People are still debating this. There are still a few people who think it was faked, although I think now that the Academy's come out with its condemnation of Will Smith's act, I think people are finally realizing, hey, it wasn't the gag. I knew it wasn't the gag as soon as I saw Will Smith's arm swing around from having contact with Chris's face. As soon as I saw Chris's face, I knew it wasn't a bit.
Yeah.
And we heard the pop. We heard the smack.
Yeah, but I thought that was like an accidental bump of the microphone because it had that thud noise rather than it wasn't that.
There's, of course, a Hollywood way to fake that, to make that sound while you're pretending to slap somebody. Mm-hmm. But that's not what happened here.
Yeah.
And, Will Smith lost control there. And as far as the joke goes, yeah, it was a dumb joke, but it was a throwaway. It wasn't.
Yeah.
And the other thing I have to point out is Will Smith was laughing at that joke. You call it a bad joke if you want
yes.
to, but Will Smith thought it was funny until he looked at his wife and saw she didn't.
Yeah.
And that's when everything changed. And I saw a woman writing, I find it very sexy that Will Smith stood up for his woman. And then Will Smith, in his remarks on accepting his Best Actor award, said we do things crazy things for love or out of and that is sadly the kind of thing an abuser says.
That's right.
I hit you because I love you. It's the only way you'll learn.
But I mean, it was a dumb joke. However, we don't assault people and disrupt live television shows because of dumb jokes or for any other reason. I mean, what we're talking about here, and the people who brought up, including Kimberly Johnson, my girlfriend, talking about toxic masculinity in this context.
Right.
This is a great illustration of toxic masculinity. It's not what Bill Maher was talking about Friday night. Bill Maher was talking about something else. Bill Maher was conflating toxic masculinity with just normal masculinity. And Bill Maher was being disingenuous. Shocker. Bill Maher was being disingenuous Friday
what
night.
What he does now.
Yeah. And so just, I thought it was coincidental that he did his rant at the end of his show about toxic masculinity. And then we get this thing Sunday night, which is actual toxic masculinity. And that's the notion that a man's job is to beat up people who insult his family. And that there's an expectation that men do that. Otherwise, they're not real men. They're not real husbands. They're not real fathers. Unless they deck someone over a joke that is 25 years old.
As somebody pointed out on Twitter, the husband of Ketanji Brown Jackson didn't jump up and slap anybody at her hearings when they were insulting her.
Yeah, great point. And so this was a case where the way to handle this sort of thing, from a masculine point of view, and this would be the masculine thing to do. This would be the truly masculine thing to do. You go backstage later and you handle it, you talk it out with Chris Rock. And you know what? If you want to scowl at him, if you want to flip him the bird as he's telling the joke and you want to be caught on camera doing that and you don't mind being caught on camera doing that, fine, do that.
And that's one of the dangerous things about the smack. It sent a message, really, that it's okay to smack somebody if they insult your wife. And a lot of Americans believe that anyway. Yeah. This simply reinforced it and spread that message to others who could be influenced.
And I have a very personal connection to this sort of thing. It's not a one-to-one comparison, obviously, with what happened Sunday night, but it's in the same universe of things. Back in 2014, I got a call from my dad who informed me that this guy showed up at his door.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out this guy, long story short, this guy is an Alex Jones disciple. Right. He's also a Sandy Hook truther, or whatever you want to call it. And he was also a guy who was going around Newtown tearing down all of the commemorative signs that honored the 20 children and six educators who died in that massacre. And so he wanted to get to me. He wanted to bring the information that he had discovered to me. And then by extension to my partner on the podcast, Chez Pazienza, who was also, he and I both also worked at the Daily Banter at the time.
Right.
And so instead, this guy shows up at my dad's door. My dad and I have the same first and last name. And so he must have looked up online, saw Bob Seska in wherever. I'm not going to say where my dad lives. But he went to my dad's house, found his way through. Found his way through two layers of security at my dad's condo complex. Wow. There's a front gate and then the security door at the front of the building. He got through both of those things. And then was knocking on my dad's door. Thank God the guy wasn't violent. But this was an example of how instead of going to an arena where we exchange ideas, instead what we do now is we have to confront people personally. And that's where it gets really creepy and dangerous. And it really, you want to talk about something that mutes and silences conversation, that silences ideas. I'm not talking about cancel culture here. I'm talking about confrontational culture. Maybe that's what we can call it.
This has been a factor or reality since the pioneer days in this country. We've seen it grow, especially over the last several decades. But it was Donald Trump, in my opinion, who opened the floodgates and made uncivil behavior okay in the minds of a lot of people.
Yeah.
People who knew better and held back before under Trump, it was demonstrated to them that they didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked about how Trump has changed the normalcy of the presidency. It changed the normalcy of Americans as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they suddenly had permission. Suddenly there were good people on both sides, knock the crap out of him at Trump rallies. This was the kind of thing that, then it's okay to do that. And Will Smith just threw another stick on the fire.
Yeah. It wasn't political, obviously. I'm not trying to make it political. No, but what I'm saying is that Will Smith felt the need. Yeah, exactly. Will Smith felt the need to, instead of just saying someone was wrong and someone was obnoxious or that the joke was lame or whatever, instead he had to make that person pay for their joke.
He had to act out.
Yes, exactly. He had to make that person physically pay for being wrong.
To a large degree, I think he did it for show. I think he did it to prove to perhaps Jada, perhaps others, that he would defend his wife.
Yeah.
It's too bad it couldn't have been Ted Cruz, but
right. So, I mean, obviously, there's been lots of speculation as to why he's done this, but ultimately, while we're not going to know what motivated Will Smith for certain, what we do know is what he did was wrong.
And the Academy, it's going to be interesting. I'd be eager to see now because the Academy for Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has promised some sort of disciplinary action against Will Smith. But they're going to have to proceed carefully here because Hollywood is still pretty divided itself over who was right or who was more right or more wrong in this instance. I guess the joke is unfortunate. I don't think Chris Rock meant any malice. Although we don't know because they do have a history, but we don't know that he had any malice. We don't know that Chris Rock knew of Jada's alopecia, despite other people seeming to know it. So there's a lot we don't know there, but it'll be interesting to see now that the Academy has condemned Will Smith's actions, it'll be interesting to see what action the Academy takes.
Yeah, and I think the ultimate takeaway with all of this, the ultimate conclusion has to be that assault is always wrong. There is no justification for an assault like this. And unless Chris Rock went up and assaulted Jada Pinkett Smith or assaulted Will Smith, there is no justification for marching up onto the stage and assaulting Chris Rock. None whatsoever. I don't care how you slice it. There's a reason why assault is against the law. There's a reason why there's a punishment that goes along with it if charges are pressed. Because it's morally wrong. You don't do that. That's not how we behave in a civil society. We don't solve our problems at the point of a gun, despite what our political leadership tends to do. We don't do that sort of thing as American citizens. And I hope this turns things around. I hope this, as I said before, starts the pendulum swinging the other way.
The weight is, just as there's pressure on Merrick Garland, there is pressure on the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to do the right thing here. It'll be interesting to see because they've got a tough line to walk here.
Yeah. So there you go. There's our opinions on the the smack.
Done and done. The smack.
We are now officially done. Okay.
Good enough.
Yes. So the Patreon app for your smartphone is the best way to stay up to date with new episodes of the Bob Seska Show, and it's the best way to listen to the show. Every time there's a new episode, you're going to get an automatic alert on your phone, notifications for the free shows on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and notifications for the Friday after party and the Shadow Docket shows too. You can listen at home or in the car with just a couple of swipes, and you can join our community of listeners in the comments under each show. Oh, and you can manage your subscriptions without ever sitting down at a computer. Subscribe for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month. That's less than a penny per episode, or kind of. I can't do the math. At BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Then download the Patreon app from the App Store onto your phone. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com. Thank you.
Rubles not accepted.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Sometimes I feel like the holiest child. Sometimes I feel like the holiest child.
As our friend George Harris, one of our jingle makers here on the show. This is a song called Holiest Child. I got a link in the description to his Bandcamp under this episode, as always, at BobSeska.com. Yeah, George made a jingle for us for the bit we did last Tuesday, Do's and Don'ts with Vlad and Vlad. So next time we do that bit, Buzz, we got a jingle for it. Looking forward to it. All right.
The pressure is on.
Yeah. Because it was so great the first time around. We got to do it. Absolutely got to do it again.
We have to meet our standards.
Yes.
And you know how low they are. So.
Okay. So don't get happy, but it looks like Russian troops appear to be moving away from Kyiv.
In large numbers, according to U.S. intelligence, yes.
Yeah, the Russian Ministry of Defense, too, said on Tuesday it has decided to drastically reduce hostilities in the Kyiv and Chernigov regions And Russian Deputy Defense Minister Alexander Fomin said, according to state media RIA, the U.S. assesses Russia will cover their retreat with air and artillery bombardment of the capital. So sure. It's not done for the people in Kyiv yet. One of the officials said, U.S. officials cautioned that Russia could always reverse again if the battle
of
conditions
course.
Allow.
Could be a fake out.
Yeah. The move follows peace talks between Russian and Ukrainian delegations in Istanbul on Tuesday. It also comes as Joe Biden holds a call with French President Emmanuel Macron, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, and United Kingdom Prime Minister Boris Johnson to discuss the latest developments in Kyiv.
I was just going to say they had that meeting at what, like 9:30 Eastern time this morning, and then at 9:15, I guess about 10:30, Macron had a scheduled phone call with just him and Putin. Yeah. I guess Macron would be representing the group in speaking to Putin, we were told at the time that this phone call with so easily confused.
I know.
That this phone call with Putin and Macron, it was very, very significant. So we'll be here to hear what comes out of that.
Yeah, disappointed that President Duda wasn't included.
Look out.
Oh, there we go. Sorry.
Of course we are.
So here's a question I have for you, Buzz. What do you think about what Joe Biden said about Vladimir Putin? He said, for God's sake, this man cannot remain in power. Gaff or not a gaff?
Not a gaffe. Clearly not a gaffe. And I, you know, I'm proud of Biden for refusing to, as the press put it, walk back his comments. And I'm disappointed in the president's staff for not doing the same on his behalf earlier. Mm. It was clear to me the moment I heard that comment live that he was not stating policy. He was speaking from his heart about what we all feel. Any reasonable person agrees that Vladimir Putin should not remain in power. Nobody can reasonably disagree with that. And to me, it's very clear Biden wasn't stating policy. He was expressing his emotional opinion, and he's right. We all agree with him.
And you know what? Generally, I agree with that. My concern is that I hope this man cannot remain in power translates into Russian the way we hope it translates into Russian. Because my concern has always been from the very beginning of this is that just the slightest move in the wrong direction could touch off a chain of events. And I'm very concerned about a chain of events that starts involving rules of engagement and the potential for nuclear weapons.
Joe Biden himself has tremendous foreign policy and diplomatic experience.
Sure.
I don't think he has sounded to me to be as sharp as a tack in discussing this. Very, very clear and clearly spoken on his position with this. I don't think Putin doesn't appear to be taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. The Kremlin has said what Biden has said means nothing. They've also framed it for the Russian people as a threat to take out Putin.
Sure.
I learned today anyway that the vast majority of Russian people agree with Vladimir Putin. Now you and I know that's because they've not been exposed to the truth or the facts.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is Russia is behind Putin and not inclined to remove him. They're not going to do it as much, at least not yet. Maybe economically they will at some point because things have gone from worse to terrible there.
Yeah.
But I never for a moment felt, you know, worried about what the response might be.
If you're an official in the Kremlin, if you're a member of the Duma, whatever, if you're a higher-up Russian government official, my hope is that you would hear what Joe Biden said and go, well, yeah, duh, obviously, they're going to want to, I mean, they don't want Vladimir Putin still in charge here because of all of the chaos and horrible atrocities and so on. And so if I'm an official in Moscow, I'm going, well, yeah, obviously, but I don't know that we're dealing with fully rational people here.
I understand. I think if we were going to see some kind of reaction, we would have seen it before now. And what we're getting out of the Kremlin is meh. You know, basically, mm-hmm. they're not all that shaken by what Biden has said.
Yeah.
But they have put out, Russian state news saying, you know, Biden's made this terrible threat. And what does that do besides brainwash Russians? It gives material to Tucker Carlson and Ted Cruz and a lot of those other clowns here.
Right. And we also know, too, and I'm sure you covered this as part of your Watergate coverage, is that in the post-Watergate era, there were all kinds of hearings and new laws that were put forth. And one of those laws was, one of those laws banned extrajudicial assassinations of foreign leaders, which had been something that we had been actively doing up until that point. And so it is illegal for the president to order the assassination of a foreign leader.
I don't think we do. I mean, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've stuck to that promise since passing that reform. Mm-hmm. And I think the Kremlin knows that, too.
I don't know that that law, the existence of that rule for the president, will keep the Russian people from going, oh, fuck them for wanting to kill our beloved Vladimir Putin. This is just a bit of nuance that I think is getting lost in the mix, inside Russia at least.
True, and they are behind Putin on that. What's going to undo Putin, unless his own military people turn on him, what's going to undo him is the Russian economy and the state thereof.
Yeah.
And it's, like I said, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. It's as bad as it's ever been, maybe worse there now.
Yep. Well, I guess lastly here, Ron DeSantis has signed the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, which we knew was going to happen. We knew this was coming down, just as all part of the walling off of the red states, making sure that the, you know, red states, you know, kind of shove out the undesirables, you know. Making sure that the undesirables are either second-class citizens or forced out of the state entirely so they can build their bullshit right-wing red hat utopias.
And right. Well, cruelty is the point of this legislation, and appealing to the angry red hat base.
Mm-hmm.
And DeSantis is running for president, he thinks, and perhaps he will. That's the noise of it. And until the majority changes here in Florida, there's not much anyone can do about it. We all need to keep our eye on DeSantis at this point, that little weasel, that little grinning weasel you just want to slap. Where's Will Smith when you need him? This guy, and I'm speaking figuratively, of course.
Of course.
This guy, the thing to watch with him now is he just rejected his own Republican legislature's redrawing of the district maps in Florida. For what purpose? To make them even worse? So watch that space and see what kind of monkey business DeSantis is up to there.
Yeah, well, on the good news side of this, and I don't know if this is good news in the long run, but at least for now, it's kind of shocking. Indiana's Republican governor, Eric Holcomb, has vetoed a bill that would ban transgender women from participating in girls' school sports. So that's a
fingers crossed, because the Utah governor did the same thing and then his legislature overrode him. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that didn't happen again in Indiana.
Yeah. Well, he said, Eric Holcomb said in his veto letter that the legislation, quote unquote, falls short of providing a consistent statewide policy for what he called fairness in K-12 sports. So I think the reason he vetoed it is it didn't go far enough. That's just, this is my analysis.
It could be.
So that makes sense. But at least for now, it's not on the books. It's been vetoed, so they're going to have to start again or reintroduce the same bill, what have you.
Say, here's a question we haven't addressed today.
Okay.
Where does the freaking time go?
No shit. No shit. Well, it's always limited. We could do a 3-hour show. We could do radio-length show. Yeah.
What if we do a shadow docket in just a couple of seconds, only for the people who are Patreon subscribers?
That's it. Why don't we do that? Let's shove everything over that get to here today over into the shadow docket show. Of course, as you all know, that is our exclusive Patreon-only bonus show that we run after every Tuesday and after every Thursday show.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's Act 3 of the show, but we make it only available to our Patreon subscribers who sign up at $5 a month. I mean, seriously, $5 a month. That's it. That's it. We can all afford $5 a month. I think that's doable.
I feel better knowing we're not done.
That's right. And we're not. We still have maybe another 15, 20 minutes to go. Coming up next on the Shadow Docket, we're going to talk about a little bit of COVID news still to come here.
Yes.
Tucker Carlson. We're going to talk about Tucker Carlson and how he was banned from Twitter and why. We're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. Plus, Madison Cawthorn. Oh, no. Yeah. Mm. And, this dumb fuck Nebraska lawmaker who had to walk back this conspiracy theory he talked about.
So we're going
to
be talking about all your favorite people.
Yes, all your favorites. In the Shadow Docket on our Patreon page. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com. Just go there, pick the tier that says $5 a month, Shadow Docket shows. It's that easy. Put in your information, and then you're all set to go. In a couple of minutes, you'll be listening to the Shadow Docket if you sign up at $5 a month. So, again, go to our Patreon page, do all that, and we thank you in advance. And I think that's it. I'm happy with the way we talked about the smack.
Me too.
I'm
I
satisfied.
Think we covered that well.
Yeah.
Don't hit people.
Yeah. Don't hit people. Violence is not the answer. I mean, we joke. It comes down to that. Yeah. That's the simple fact of the matter. Even though it was a stupid, what a stupid joke. What a stupid joke to get assaulted over.
It was. Too, it's as stupid as Oma and Oprah.
That's right. All right. See you on the Shadow Docket, folks. Take care. Bye-bye. Hands to yourself.
Don't look up.